have the picture.
Oh, you did?
Yes, this we're just to, so everyone understands, our topic for today is Tehillim, Yeshayahu, and the last eight psukim of the Torah. What these three things have in common, as I mentioned at the end of the last class, is they have, at least in the case of Tehillim and Yeshayahu, significant sections of the book that logic would dictate. If you're approaching it simply from logic would dictate that someone after that author wrote these words. Okay, we'll deal with how Chazal deal with that and how we can respond to it. Okay, so our books are Tehillim, Yeshayahu, and the last eight psukim of the Torah. This is how we ended last class. Okay. Today is September 7th. We're taping our third class of intro, or I should say text, context, and tradition. All right? So what you're reading now, what you're going to start to read, what I signed last week, is the end of the statement of who helped David write Sefer Tehillim. Gemara says, in its description of the authors of the books of Tanakh, that David did not write the book of Tehillim alone. He had the works of 10 predecessors, and he used their works to come up with the ultimate sefer we have in our hands of 150 chapters called Sefer Tehillim. This is it's not a midrashic brainer. These people are mentioned in the headings of Tehillim. All right, so if it says Lamatzeach Livnei Korach or Mizmor LaAsaf, right, or someone named Haman or Eitan is mentioned in Tehillim, it's not a stretch to say that these guys were involved in Tehillim. Fair enough, okay? Right? So, well, just one last note is that in Chazal, there is a medrash that says that a man called Haman, who ostensibly lived at the time of Shlomo, because it says Shlomo was so wise, he was even wiser than Haman, and he was wiser than Eitan. A man named Haman and Eitan were very wise, but not as wise as Shlomo. Okay? There is a medrash that says that this man, Eitan, is none other than Avraham Avinu. Okay. Just a medrash. Okay, lots of medrashim like this. We'll talk about how Midrashim, what their agenda is later in the semester. So the Midrash says that Eitan is Avraham. Problem is that Avraham is mentioned among these 10.
When they
came before. Avraham is one of the 10 people who helped David write Tehillim. Obviously they didn't live at the same time, but Avraham left some written works, right? From Avraham to David is not more than from Columbus to us. Right, we have Columbus's letters. So Avram left some written works that David incorporated into Tehillim. Fine, that's fine. It's just that if you think Avram is Eitan, then Eitan is also one of those 10 who helped David write Tehillim. It's not 10, it's 9. And you're calling one person by two different names. You got me so far? Obviously, this Gemara does not think Avraham is Eitan. Got it? Because they list them separately. Okay, let me just finish the point. There is a list in Koheles Rabbah, quite a late medrash. This medrash is going to come up again in this semester when we talk about canonization. There is a list of 10 people who helped David write Tehillim that includes not Eitan, because that medrash seems to say I can't list Avram and Eitan in the same list. We think Avram is Eitan. You with me so far? Okay. That list has Ezra. Ezra is one of the 10 people who helped David write Tehillim. And that will resolve our issue here, right, as far as Tehillim is concerned. Right? I don't mind a prophet writing about something that happens 800 years from now. I'm quite certain that Zechariah specifically and explicitly wrote about the Hanukkah story in his prophecies. One cannot doubt that if we reread on Shabbos Chanukah, as Haftorah, which if it is Zechariah, it's in Sefer Zechariah, was spoken 400 years earlier, speaks of a war against Greece where we will defeat from the few, defeat the many. He speaks about rampant assimilation and the role of the Kohen Gadol in defeating this enemy. Kohen Gadol is the main feature in that Haftarah, right? But most important, he speaks about a menorah that theoretically runs out of oil, but there will always be a never-ending flow of oil to this menorah. And at the end of this Haftarah, Zechariah says, God, I don't understand a thing of what I just saw. What are these trees with many tubes, these olive trees running into the two sides of a menorah and filling it up? He says, I don't understand what I'm saying. What does the Kohen Gadol have to do with this? And the answer is obvious. Of course he doesn't know what he's seeing. It hasn't happened yet. It's not a prophecy for now, Zechariah. It's a prophecy for the distant future. Got it? Okay, this is one of 13 visions in Sefer Zechariah that, at least according to Abravanel, he's a mad genius in his commentary to Zechariah. Predict the events of the next 1,500 or even 2,000 years. He stops in his own time. Abravanel, why did you go to 2,000? Why did you stop at 1,500? Right? The first of the 13 visions involved three horses. The last of his 13 visions involved three horses. Abravanel says that the first vision is about the three kingdoms emanating from Alexander the Great. The last vision, Abravanel really thought he was living at the time of Mashiach, and he wrote about it in a special book, and it ended up being a commentary to Sefer Daniel. And he said that the last three horses are the three ships sailing with Columbus to the New World. He thought that that was a harbinger of the Messianic Age. Right? And he shows the 13 visions of 13 main historical events taking place, Hanukkah being one of them. You got it? Okay? So, why am I telling you all this? Because no one is going to have a gripe with a Navi who talks about the future. Right? That's what they're paid to do. That's what a Navi does. Right? So, this is what people do all the time. Christians are very good at this too. Right? This is what the whole New Testament is according to them. Is to look at events that they seem to take place in the Tanakh. The problem is that they're usually philologically untenable. They read the word virgin when it's really young maiden, and a thousand other examples like that. They read it selectively. Okay, that's what they did. But the point is that if you see in Sefer Tehillim something that explicitly refers to, let's say, the Six-Day War or something like that, and it's so clear once you read it, because now you know the history, all right? Okay, fine, but for David, just conquering Jerusalem and just building it up, to sing so many prokim of Tehillim that refer to its destruction, its laid waste, the people are crying because Yerushalayim is in a state of destruction, that becomes illogical. That should be written at the time of David. You hear it? Okay, so this Medrash deals with it. Ezra wrote these few prokim. You know them on our father Shem Mishav and the God of Jesus. There's a chreinu is Tzion. It's Tzion right in front of us. Right? Okay? Shira Malos Meshuv Hashem as Shiva Tzion Ha'idu Kechomim. What? What's Shiva Tzion? We're here in Shiva. It's crazy. We were here in Tzion for 500 years. What are you talking about? Shiva Tzion. Okay, a prophetic man sees it and he writes about it. The other option, Sadigon discusses this. The other option, if you insist that David wrote all 150 chapters, right, is something we will relate to when we get to the Yeshayahu problem, which is just coming up. Now your question. Okay, answered it. Okay, so you're all ready with me? This is what we're up to. It says, David wrote Tehillim al Yidei na 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 na, and it's finishing now, but al Yidei Shlosha b'nei Korach. Next, Yirmiyah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay, those are his three books. Sifro means Sefer Yirmiyahu and Malachim
and
Kinos. Kinos being Eicha, as we learned last week.
Yeshaya, Mishrei,
Okay, we'll go. This will do the last 15 minutes of this class. Really? Chizkiyahu wrote these? Is this crazy? I thought Yeshayahu wrote Yeshayahu, and I thought Shlomo wrote these. Who's telling us Chizkiyahu, the king of Israel at the time of Yeshayahu? Who knew this? Authored four books of the Bible? Wow. Want to hear more? Later, half hour from now. Could continue? Can anyone just on if we have time today, we'll get into this. What do these four books have in common that Yechezkel couldn't write Yechezkel? Shnei Masor, Daniel, Megillas Esther. What are these four books? Yechezkel, Shnei Masor, Daniel, and Megillas Esther. Come on, what do these four have in common, right, by the way?
They're all in exile.
They're all in exile. Yes. Now, Shnei Masor, Trei Esor, happens in Israel, to be sure. But the three prophets who put them together did so while in exile. Okay? You with me? Or it's possible that they were back in Israel, but I would say that this one stands out and might be a contradiction to what we said on the last page. Remember on the very first day I asked, the Gemara asked, why was Shnei Masor put into one book? Remember that? Why didn't you just put them, pepper them where they are? So we said two reasons, yes?
One, because we might forget it.
Might forget it because they're so small. Some of them are very small. But another reason, because some of them are larger. So put the large, by that measure, put the larger ones by themselves. Yeah, what was the other reason? Because?
Oh, because Haggadah's RMLF, we chose...
Chose those nine to be Nevuah Shebutzu Kol HaDoros, necessary prophecies for the generations, and they put those nine together. So wait a second, make up your mind. Is the author of Shnei Masor Chagai Zecharia Malachi, or what the Gemara here says, Anshei Knesset HaGedolah? The obvious answer being something I said in the first class. Yudal Olam Adbeis says Chagai Zecharia Malachi wrote Trei Esor and put it together as it is. And here the Gemara says Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. What's the obvious answer? They were Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Alright? Chagai Zecharia Malachi are Anshei. They're the heads of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. They're the founders of Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Yes?
So why does the Gemara go to the trouble of listing them as instead of saying their names, they say Anshei in this specific
case? I think because they just put these four together and they just said, okay, instead of saying Shnei Masor is Chagai Zecharia Malachi, Chagai Zecharia Malachi is Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. There are more people than Chagai Zecharia Malachi and Anshei Knesset. There are 50 more people. And their names are Nehemiah, and their names are Ezra, and their names are Mordechai, probably. The rabbis who were involved with bringing back the exiles and starting by Sheni and getting things moving to fulfill the prophecies of Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel that were made 50, 60, 70 years earlier, those guys are Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. How long did they last? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, until Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik indisputably lived in about the year 300 BCE. 300 BCE. How long before then these events are taking place, where Anshei Knesset HaGedolah starts doing their work, is that doctorate I said that's waiting to be written someday, right? No one knows what happened to approximately 200 years of missing history. It's an enigma, right? I say no one knows. It's a famous problem. Right, the Christian era is did I say Christian era? The Persian era, the time when the Persians ruled until the Greeks ruled. It's a great debate how long that was. I mean, we have the names of these Persian kings. Chazal make the astounding claim that whole period was all of 33 years. Which would mean that Anshei Knesset HaGedolah's work was done over quite a short period of time. Right? All right, that's really not something you may come up with. I told you this, my daughter wrote an article for Kol HaMavazir last year, putting out all the different answers that have been proposed until now. Her name is Mindy Schwartz. If you're curious about this time period, you can go look for last year's Kol HaMavazir. All right, so that's just it. Yeah, we still have to explain why this game is attributed to this, but this is the game, the correct answer. These are taking place in Chutz Laaretz, all right? Okay, Yechezkel started giving Nevuah in Israel, right? A Navi can't start giving his nevuah outside of Israel. That's why these guys have to be written by others. Right? But that apparently was Yonah's chiddush. God, I'm leaving Israel. Go ahead. I'd rather die than give this prophecy. Right? So God has messengers. I'll bring you back. I have a whale. I'll get you back somehow. All right? Okay. All right. So good. So we are now in Ezra Kosav Sifro. Continue, please.
Ezra Kosav Sifro.
Yachas. Shel Divrei Yamim.
Yachas Shel Divrei Yamim.
Adlo. That is, that. On the face of it, this seems to mean Ezra wrote the book of Ezra, right? And Sefer Divrei HaYomim, Adlo? What does that mean? Until his day. So there's a chiddush. Some Rishonim say that there is a pasuk that refers to Ezra's lineage in Divrei HaYomim with the word lo in it, ending that pasuk. So the Gemara says Adlo means until that pasuk. Who takes over after that? Continue. In other words, he didn't leave Bavel until he finished writing these things, until he made showed his own yichus all the way up to Aaron. His yichus is listed all the way up to Aaron, straight through every member, straight to Aaron. All right, go ahead.
Manaske,
who finished after that?
Nechamia ben
Okay, so that's it. That's the end. That's the end of our treatment of. That's actually the end of the brisa of who authored these works. All right. We talked about Nechamia. Why he doesn't get his own book last class? Yes, please.
Yichus is like
lineage. Yes. Okay. Okay. Okay, now here is continue Omar Mar.
Omar Mar Yeshua, Kasav Sifra Yishmar Tzukim, Shem Torah.
Okay, do you understand what the Gemara is doing now? We just finished a Brisa written before the year 200, right? Now, someone, Omar, we don't know who it is, just Mar, someone in the time of the Amorayim, is asking a question up to 100, 200 years later. What does this Brisa mean? I suspect that this question was asked shortly after. This is a very curious question that wouldn't have taken 200 years for Amoraim to start debating. This Brisa has one part of it that seems to be extremely controversial. If you want to say that Chizkiyahu wrote Yeshayahu, I'll open my ear, I'm willing to listen. But the question of someone besides Moshe having an input into the Torah, that's something our Gemara chooses to elaborate on immediately. Right? I would have asked, what? Chizkiyahu wrote Mishlei? I thought it says Mishlei Shlomo. Right? Gemara chooses not to elaborate on it. And it doesn't. That's why we have Rashi. He tells us why based on other Gemaras, by the way, why the works of Shlomo are attributed to Chizkiyahu. Right? I might have asked, why can't Yechezkel write his own book? And what, I mean, Yeshayahu and Yechezkel don't write their own book, but Yirmiyahu does? Well, I don't get it. What's the difference? The Gemara chooses not to debate these issues. We have Mefarshim, we have Rishonim, okay? All right? So now, Omar Mar is the elaboration of this Brisa, now goes straight through. But okay, it starts with Yehoshua, that's before all these guys. But they don't elaborate on these other issues. So let's see what Gemara has to say about this. Yehoshua Kosav Sifro Shmona Pesukim Shabbatorah. Tanya Kimanda Omar. Tanya Kimanda Omar means this Brisa that we just finished now is not Aliba Dechule Alma. Not everyone agrees with it. Continue, please.
Tanya
Kimanda
Omar Yehoshua Kosavan De Tanya Uyamas Shem Moshe Avesham.
Read the word mace, but for now. If Shar Moshe mace, Kosav Ayom Shar Moshe. Can you explain the question? Remember, I told you we discussed this, right?
The question is, this is saying like since the Yeshua wrote some of the Torah, because could Moshe have written and Moshe died?
Yes, so on the face of it, at least the way the Marsha explains what's about to happen, is that it just looks like a biological question. As far as we know, dead men don't write. Okay? You have a simple answer to that question, which is...
He wrote it before he died.
He wrote it before he died. What's the question? Right? The Hashem made his hand move while he did. Come on. Why is this a question? He wrote it before he died. Obviously, by this person asking this question, he feels that he didn't write it before he died because he only wrote things as they happened. That's a Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Maseches Gittin, Daf Samach. It says, Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna. The Torah is written in scrolls as the things happened. You think Moshe came down from Har Sinai with a description of the Meraglim? Of course not. He wouldn't have sent them. Moshe came down from Har Sinai until everything that happened until then. And then slowly, he wrote down Megillah, as Hashem told him the events. Vayikra came here, the beginning of Midbar here. We don't know how, but slowly. And then he put it all together at the end. All right. But he can't, he's not going to write about things that haven't happened yet. You with me? So, Efshar Moshe Mace means, okay, it's right now it stands as just a biological question. Dead men don't write. But if you see that little bet there, you notice that when brackets, when parentheses are written like this, the Gemara is telling you, don't read this word. All right? When brackets are like squared, it means read the words in between them. That's true in all manuscript work and all, right? Okay, why put the word there if you don't want to read it? Because we found it in a lot of manuscripts. But are the people writing, people editing this and then printing this, feel we found it in manuscripts, so we're going to print it, but we don't think it belongs, so we're going to put parentheses around it. When they have it like this, why put the parentheses? If you want, put the brackets. If you want people to read it, just put the words there. So this means, yeah, what can you think?
That it wasn't originally there.
It wasn't originally there. We didn't find it in most manuscripts. But our experience and our investigation shows that either by looking at also a few older manuscripts, we think the words belong. So on this, there are a few very, very important names to know. The Bach, you've heard of the Bach, is a commentary to the Torah, Bais Chodosh. The Bach, he lived in the 16th century. I think there's a famous actress who glorifies in the fact that she's a direct descendant of this person. His name was Yoel Zirkus, and his son-in-law was the Taz, who is, I don't remember his name right now, I think it's Gwyneth Paltrow, I think that's her name. She always says, she walks around saying, I'm a direct descendant of the Bach. Good for her. So anyway, so the Bach was very good at correcting what he thought was, to use the use of this word, corrupt texts. Texts that he thought were mistaken by a copyist or someone else who inadvertently wrote the wrong word someplace. Anyway, he thinks that the word on bet, it's actually in the corner, but it's cut off here, should be chai. Efshar Moshe chai? Can Moshe be alive and write by Yomas Moshe? First question is a biological question. Second question looks like
moral.
Moral. I mean, it's a sheker. How can you write Moshe got it and you're still alive? I don't want sheker in my Torah, even for one day. Right? So someone else might say, oh, come on, keep your shirt on. He wrote it two days before he died. No one saw it. So he wrote it for 2 days. Big deal. No one's going to die over this. All right? Okay, that's the debate. Okay, let's see. Continue reading, please. I'm going to ask someone else to read now. Let's see, there's someone who chose here. Okay, Micha, you hear me then? Okay. So continue reading, please. So it says, Tanya, Kimanda Omar, Shmonik Sukim Shibatori, Yoshua Ksav. The Tanya, Yamas Shamoshe, but Hashem Efshar Moshe, Chai, Bekosav, Yamas Moshe. All right, now that's where we left off just now. Continue, please. Hello.
Hello,
I've come
to tell Moshe. So rather, until this point, Moshe wrote it, and from then on, it was written by Yeshua.
Okay, that's the opinion of, just read the whole thing. Read
it.
Rabbi Nechemiah. So some say it's Rabbi Yehuda who said, hold this, some say it's Rabbi Nechemiah. Okay, so then another Tana responds, go ahead.
Amar lo Rabbi Shimon.
Yep.
Afshar.
Sefer Torah.
Sefer Torah.
Chaser.
Chaser. Oh, he's missing a letter.
Even one letter?
Aha. Okay, one letter. Bikiv. Lakav. Sefer Torah. Zev. Taylor. Hashan. Akadish Barak. Homer. So, what? Wait, what's the word? Lamed.
Lekoach.
Lekoach.
You take this Sefer Torah.
Ela Hashan Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer. The Moshe Omer. The Kote Kota. We come to Ela.
Just almost finished. Continue. Just one more line. Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer.
Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer. The Moshe Kote.
B'demo. I think Mara has a commotion MR, I'm not going to go there right now. But what did you just read? What did Mara say?
I know the last word is tears.
Yeah.
So I guess that means...
this opinion holds that Moshe wrote it, right?
Yeah.
What's his proof, though? See, the last eight psukim suggest a problem of the authorship of the person who, for one reason or another, cast a doubt that he is truly the author of such a thing. But there's a pasuk, three or four prakim, well before the end of the book. Right? It's in Devarim Perek Lamed Aleph. Devarim has 34 prakim in it. In Perek Lamed Aleph, there is a pasuk that seems to indicate that there is a full, completed Sefer Torah that Moshe gave over to the people to learn after he's no longer there. It's not the day before he died, but when Hashem tells Moshe in this pasuk, take this Torah, put it in the Aron, let them study it, this will guide them forever, right? That this Torah not only already had Vayomas Shom Moshe, it had Hazinu in it, it had... This pasuk is in next week's parsha. And you're following this four more prakim after a pasuk in the Torah that says, maybe the day before Moshe, forget about the last day of Sukkot. Moshe wrote for the last four prakim before he died and put it in to a Sefer Torah. Don't read this until I'm not here anymore. All right? You know what I'm saying? There's no great predictions in this book. And then the next day he told them, he gave them, called them all over and gave them all blessings. And then he said, okay, I'm going upstairs. Right? Rav Shimon does not have the problems we just mentioned. Right, it looks Mexican Shikra, says the Marsha. It looks like a biological problem. I don't care. For 2 days, there was a Torah in Aron. Don't look. There are no great predictions in there that someone might want to steal in and see what horse to bet on. Right? You know what I'm saying? Right, so Rav Shimon isn't bothered with everything we just said. Finished. Okay. Got it? That's the end of this Gemara. Now let's answer these other questions. So it's Machlokes Tanoim, who wrote those last eight psukim. Well, it gets a lot more interesting than that, because of these core sources. Let's talk. So I think we basically dealt with that issue. Right? Yecheskel from Chutz Laaretz. Let's deal with Yeshayahu first. Why can't Yeshayahu write his book? So this is a Maimar Chazal, amazingly, our Gemara does not deal with. The first question I would have asked, what do you mean Yeshayahu? Why can't Yeshayahu write his book? So this is a Gemara at the end of Masechet Sanhedrin. If you go to a Daf Yomi share, you're going to get it in about a month from now. The Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin says that Yeshayahu couldn't write his own book because he died suddenly. He was actually killed by the king of Israel, by Menashe. Right? And he had all his works together, right? The Agadata is, I must say, is a bit difficult, because if he was killed by Menashe, that means that Chizkiyahu was no longer king. Right? Chizkiyahu is, but all right, Menashe was not king yet, and he killed Yeshayahu. All right. You know what I'm saying? Chizkiyahu, I'm not going to get into mixing these pickles, but
But Yeshayahu dies suddenly, the Gemara says. How he died is not our concern right now. He had all his works together, but a prophet gives his sermons over and his drushes and his best attempts at getting people to do tshuva and his railing against the korbanos, right, by immoral people. And at the end of his life, he puts it all together, right? And he puts it in a bundle, right? And then some years later, Ezra got his hands on these bundles and gave it the form we have today, right? This is true of every book of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Just we insist that the Torah had its completed form. We'll talk about canonization and Mesorah. Oh boy, we're going to get into this very big time. How can we be sure that what Moshe left for us is what we have in our hands today? We'll talk about that. Right? So Yeshayahu didn't complete his work because he died suddenly and he didn't have a chance to put it all together. Chizkiyahu did it for him. Simple. That's what the Gemara says at the end of Sanhedrin. Right? I'm just amazed that our Gemara wasn't curious to bring all that out. Okay, it's Rashi and Tosfos. But then Tosfos asks another question on Yirmiyahu. Because Yirmiyahu lived in Israel, fine, so he doesn't have Yechezkel's problem, but he died in Chutz Laretz. At the end of Sefer Yirmiyahu, if you know the book, start reading that material that I gave you, Yirmiyahu was taken forcibly to Egypt and ostensibly died there. Right? Tosfos says that. Tosfos says, right, you look at the Tosfos that says, Perush HaKuntris, the Yecheskel Lo Kasav Sifro, as you mentioned, right? Lefi Shehaya B'chutz La'aretz. Good. You should say that he was taken to Egypt. He didn't go to Egypt. Right? Okay. So he says, by the measure of Yechezkel not being written by himself, but by Anshei Knesset Gedolah, Yirmiyahu also should have been written by Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Because he also died in Chutz La'aretz. And we don't see that in the book that he returned to Israel. So why does this Tana say Yirmiyahu wrote Yirmiyahu? Tosfos just leaves it. I might answer that this Tana feels that Yirmiyahu did return to Israel. Otherwise he would have listed Yirmiyahu in this list. You can read the book and see that Yirmiyahu didn't end his life in, as far as the book is concerned, in Israel. Follow? I might also see another difference between Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel. Yirmiyahu's, the vast majority of his prophecies were in Chutz La'aretz. Only a few prophecies are given in Israel. But Yirmiyahu, his vast majority is in Israel. Just a few last prophecies in the book are outside of Israel. I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay, you got that? Everyone clear? So Yeshayahu doesn't write Yeshayahu because he didn't have his material at the end of his life. Someone else had to put it together. For Ezra to put, give it its final form. You with me? What about these three? So, says Rashi and Tosfos at the top of the page, that you ever try to read some of Rav Soloveitchik's own words? Words, most of his works to this day, there are scores and scores of them, are written by Talmidim. Right? The notes of Talmidim in his class. I believe the very first work written by a Talmud of the Rav's Torah was a book called Reflections of the Rav, back in the early 50s, by a man named Avraham Bezdin. Right? So, it's in two volumes now. It's really excellent works on different topics. And of course, he writes in the beginning, if I misrepresent the Rebbe's words, it's my fault. But, you know, he looked over it, he gave it, and the Rav said, it's okay, you can print it, right? Written across the back of the spine of all these books is the word Soloveitchik. Now that could be because that Soloveitchik will sell more books than Bezdin, right? But the words you're reading on the page are whose words? Avram Bezdin. No, he wrote that book. But whose Torah is it? And that's why he gets Soloveitchik on it, right? Anywhere in the front cover or on the spine does it say anything about Avraham Bezdin. This is the Rav's Torah, right? I'd rather not even mention it at all. This is, but it happens to be my words, right? Okay, so that's the relationship between Shlomo and Chizkiyahu. Rashi says that because Chizkiyahu taught, and these are also based on Agadatas at the end of Sanhedrin, that Chizkiyahu taught Torah, b'chol klal Yisrael, every young boy and girl knew all of it. It's amazing what the Gemara says about it. And it's based on Pesukim, Divrei Hayamim and Melachim. That Chizkiyahu made a great tshuva movement, brought Torah back to Israel, and here's the kicker, Chizkiyahu is mentioned in Mishlei. Got it? It says Chizkiyahu and his helpers put together and edited Hetiku. It says Gam Eila Mishlei Shlomo Asher Hetiku Chizkiyahu Va'anashav. That's an awful anachronism. Chizkiyahu lived 300 years after Shlomo. How could he be mentioned in the work of Shlomo? Following? Right, the answer is Shlomo put down three works. They were so advanced, people couldn't figure them out. Right? There's a midrash like this, Novus Dravinosum. Shlomo's works, especially Kopelas, was written in such a form that you couldn't figure it out. You would try to read some of Aaron Lichtenstein's own words. Right? You can't get by three sentences. Right? Not because it's poorly written, but because who's on that level to you have to go take a thesaurus with you for every sentence, and even the concepts are very difficult, right? Until someone Avraham Bezdin or so, you know, until Chizkiyahu came and gave it a form that Amchel can read, so he's given credit for those three. You with me now? Everyone okay with now why Chizkiyahu is attributed here, gets these four books? Question.
Yeah, so Shlomo actually wrote them, but Chizkiyahu was the one who, like...
The words you're reading are Chizkiyahu's words. That's what it means. Miksavon. Chizkiyahu wrote them. But it was with the notes, right? I'm saying what? The actual words you're reading are Avraham Bezdin. He wrote the words, or the Rav just gave the shir, right? But it's the Chachma of Rav Soloveitchik. So he writes Soloveitchik on the edge.
But Chizkiyahu also wrote Yeshayahu.
So the words you're reading in Yeshayahu, that's the simple meaning of this Gemara. We're finally written by Chizkiyahu. The words you're reading. But they reflect, it may very well be that, I mean, I wouldn't call it plagiarizing. It may reflect the actual, you know, the notes from Yeshayahu. It may reflect the actual notes of Yeshayahu. All right? Okay. Now please turn to the next page. A few pages of Ibn Ezra here. Can you have the back there? Yeah, we'll just try to get it online. We're looking at where it says, by Ya'al Moshe, Arvos Moab. Okay? By Ya'al Moshe. Eliran?
Yeah.
Please. You're reading right here. Just be reading one line.
Fidati.
Ki mize.
Ki mize pasuk katav Yeshua. Ki afar shalah Moshe lo katav.
Okay, that's all. I know I didn't ask you to prepare this, right?
Yeah.
Fine. This pasuk is part of the last chapter of Sefer Devarim. Perek Lamed Dalid obviously starts with Pasuk Aleph through Zayin, and then Pasuk Chet. Aleph through Dalid, and Pasuk He through Yud Bet starts by Yomas Moshe. Pasuk Aleph begins by Ya'al Moshe. Yeah. So Moshe went up to the mountain to die. God called him, come up like Aaron, come up to this mountain. Only Moshe took Aaron with his son. Moshe went up alone. It says no one knew where he's buried. He's going alone, right? You see what's going on here? All right. So Ibn Ezra writes in his commentary. You all have heard of Ibn Ezra, right? Lived in the was born in the end of the 11th century. And Perek Lamed Dalet has this configuration. And see where this is going. He says, Lefi Dati, I think that from this Pasuk Moshe couldn't write. He's obviously siding with Rabbi Yehuda Ritem Rabbi Nechemya in our Gemara. Right? He could have just said, I hold like Rav Shimon, forget about everything else. Moshe wrote Vayomas Moshe, Moshe wrote Vayal Moshe. But if you are inclined towards the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Ritem Rabbi Nechemya, you should also be inclined to say that Moshe didn't write the last 12 Pasukim of the Torah. Okay, you got it? Simple. Because if you feel that Moshe wrote things as they happened, what did he throw down those four Pasukim in a bottle for someone to find? No one knows where he went. Okay? Everyone clear? Yes?
Isn't there an opinion that Yeshua went up with
him? No. Yeshua went up with him to get the Torah. Right, he met him on the way down, but not to die. Okay. That would be an interesting answer, but then the Torah couldn't say no one knows where he's buried. or because you know maybe Moshe went a little up the way and then Moshe said, here, but Yoshua, write these four Pesukim also. Right, but then it's Yoshua writing the 12. Anyway. Okay? Alright. So that's that. Now look at you see this text of Ibn Ezra is from a 6-volume work on Ibn Ezra called Machokeke Yehuda. The author is Yehuda Krinsky. And he wrote all kinds of notes on Ibn Ezra, Yahal Or, Karne Or, Minchas Yehuda. See these? These are all notes telling you, to start with, Ibn Ezra's source. Right? So he says the source of this opinion, that the last 12 sukkim were not written by Moshe, is, you see the Aleph, I underlined it at the bottom. Aleph, can you read it again? Yep. Just what's on, see what's on the line. The chain who. No. Well, it's on the line. The chain who da'as, towards the bottom, under Yahal Or. You see it? What you just read, look on the same page. No, you're reading the wrong page.
Oh, I see.
The chain who da'as. Rabbi Huda, the Amrei Rabbi Chemia. That's what we just read, right?
Yeah.
Come on, Yehuda Krinsky was a great chacham and a great scholar. He can open up the Gemara and see this is not Rabbi Huda Bitem Rabbi Nechemia, because we can count between 8 and 12. Right? I would have preferred if he had written this note a little differently. V'chein hu mivusas al Rabbi Huda Bitem Rabbi Nechemia. This is decidedly not the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. You agree, all following with me? I can tell the difference between 8 and 12. He may be correct that this is based on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon will say, I have no problem with Moshe writing by Yomas Moshe. I have no problem with Moshe writing by Yal Moshe. In fact, I have no problem with Moshe writing all of the last four prokim in advance of the events. It says, take this Torah, put it away, and give it to the people. That Torah was complete that day. Right? It wouldn't make sense to have a complete Torah already at Mamar Har Sinai, but it makes perfect sense that a day or two before, so what? He wrote it in advance. I have no problem with that, says Rav Shimon. Okay, you got it? Let's just quickly read another Ibn Ezra. I'm going to read it. Look at the other page where it's underlined. It's not underlined. There's a little note, the Be'ever Hayarden. Okay? It says, these are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yarden. Please imagine that this line here is the Yarden. Okay? Here's the Kinneret. Here's the Yam HaMelech. All right? Okay, you got it? Here's the Mediterranean. Moshe died on A or B?
A.
Okay. So Devarim starts off with 5 Pesukim. Perek Aleph, Pesukim Aleph through Hey. It starts off with 5 Pesukim that says, these are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yarden. And on that, Ibn Ezra writes something very cryptic. I'm going to read. Follow with me, please. Be'evar Yarden de Midbar Ba'arava. V'im tavin sod hashneimasar. If you understand the secret of the 12, gam, then you will also understand these four psukim. He mentions four psukim that are not here, right? These are four psukim that appear in different places in the Torah. Okay? Gam, v'yev tov Moshe, and sefer Torah. Ba'aknan yod ba'aretz, ba'har Hashem yira'eh, v'inei arso eres barzel, v'kir ha'emes, finished. If you know the secret of the 12, if you recognize the secret of the 12, then you will also recognize these four psukim, and you will understand the truth. Whole books are written to try to interpret what this is. In fact, whole chapters of books are written trying to prove that this is not even Ibn Ezra, that he couldn't have written this. Okay? I just want to answer three questions. Right? I'm going to give you the three questions. Now we're going to answer them on Tuesday. Three questions are: one, what is the secret of the 12? Two, what are these four psukim? What do they have in common? Three, why is this here? What does this have to do with Bei Vayarde, with Moshe introducing Sefer Devarim? None of these four psukim are here in Perek Aleph of Sefer Devarim. Why are you telling me this here? Okay. What does Be'er Yardin have to do with anything? Okay. Have you heard of Baruch Spinoza? You've heard of him? Okay. He is the first thinker of thought, prominence. He introduced the concept to the that became known as biblical criticism, that the Torah could not have been written by one person, and that the Torah was written by four or five different people, that it's not transmitted by God, and this was considered heretical by his colleagues, to put them in chayr. Right? Okay. So you might argue, you want to say, well, what do you think? It shouldn't make you a heretic. I believe so was a Machal Shabbos. He didn't keep the mitzvahs because he didn't think they were from God. Right. So the Reform and Conservative movement love Baruch Spinoza. They want him out of Cherem. He's still in Cherem, by the way, by the Amsterdam community. So Baruch Spinoza writes about, he says, what I said about Torah authorship is Ibn Ezra's opinion. Because the secret of the 12, he had his own interpretation. He wrote a little pamphlet about what he thinks the secret of the 12 is, right? And a much greater, certainly much greater biblical thinker than him, known as Shmuel David Lutzato, known as Shadal. Familiar with him? He was a great scholar of the 19th century. I use his name because he was totally accepted in the scholarly Jewish world, but also in the Torah Jewish world, which was very rare in the 19th century. Very few names. I can give you Avram Berliner, David Zvi Hoffman, Shmuel David Lutzato. And he has a certain resurgence of his works now. They're all being translated by Kodesh Press. He's very popular today. So I'm going to talk to you next class about what the secret of the 12 is, how Baruch Spinoza got it wrong, because the secret of the 12 is I think everyone in this class knows what it is already. It's that it's not just the last 8 psukim in the Torah that Moshe wrote, it's that the last 12 psukim in the Torah Moshe wrote. That's innocuous. Big deal. Rabbi Yehuda would probably agree. But Spinoza tried to prove from actually this week's parsha. See if you can come back on Tuesday with a proof from this week's parsha that Spinoza uses a pasuk in this week's parsha to prove, based on something called the secret of the 12, that Moshe couldn't have written the Torah. And Shadal writes throughout his parish, Spinoza's a liar. He knew that he was wrong about Ibn Ezra, and he tried to prove that Ibn Ezra holds in his opinion in order to not keep Shabbos. It's an amazing configuration and it's pretty clear what the secret of the 12 is based on today's presentation. And Baruch Spinoza, if you don't believe Moshe wrote the Torah, fine, but don't claim that it's Ibn Ezra who held that. Right? If you claim it's Ibn Ezra has a certain standing, you know, that gave credence to his opinion. That's your opinion. Stand on your own shoulders. Don't stand on Ibn Ezra's shoulders. Right? Go to any biblical criticism book in the library, they'll say, we owe our allegiance to Baruch Spinoza, the father of biblical criticism, who could never have done what he did if not for the work of the grandfather of biblical criticism. I'm not making that up. He's known as the grandfather of biblical criticism, Ibn Ezra, who must be rolling over in his grave, unless he just doesn't care what the Anchor Bible and the International Critical Edition thinks about him. But he is called, because of what he wrote here in the beginning of Dvarim, the grandfather of biblical criticism. Right? It basically says the Torah is not divine, the Torah is written by multiple authors, came down to us over almost 1,000 years, etc., etc. We're going to give, we're going to continue this discussion with Shem next class. You all have a great Shabbos, everybody. And have a great day to you.